From the Rams facility at Cal Lutheran, welcome to Between the Horns. I'm Miles Simmons, joined by DeMarco Farr in D. Rams have a new head coach, Sean McVay.
Yeah, powerful press conference. I love the way he commanded the room. You know, we talked about this earlier. I think we were talking about Tom Coughlin and the age factor.
Yes, we were.
Yeah, and a lot of people brought up how young Sean McVay is. When you see him, okay, that's the first thing that jumps out. Wow, he looks very young. But when you listen to him speak, the guy's got a lot of football knowledge.
He does.
He's got a lot of passion for the game. So, I mean, all that stuff will translate when you're sitting in front of a group of guys that want to get to the Super Bowl. So, yeah, impressed. Day one, the press conference, very impressive.
Yeah, you know, guys often win the press conference. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, I don't usually hear, you know, somebody's like, oh, we lost the press conference today. Like, man, you know, he wasn't very impressed. Like, that's not going to happen when you're introducing a head coach. Fine. But being that as it may, Sean McVay, I thought, was really impressive in just the fact that when he's standing up there, I don't think he's 30. You know what I mean?
You think
when you have a 30-year-old head coach, he's the youngest head coach in NFL history, you tend to think that, oh, man, I'm going to continue to remember that this guy's 30 the whole time every time he opens his mouth, and I didn't.
I wonder if the Rams have success with him, say year one, year two, year three, and you actually do get to a Super Bowl, does the NFL start going that way?
What, just totally younger?
Everybody starts to trend younger at some point. I know baseball did it in the front office.
Okay, they started
to trend younger
because of Theo Epstein's success.
I mean, why not? I mean, if he's bringing that sort of energy around the building, as long as he can back it up with the knowledge, and he seems like he can so far, and he comes highly recommended from guys that don't really, you know, have a whole lot of good things to say about a lot of people that are coaching right now. So when you hear, when I hear from my old teammate Marshall Faulk, this guy's the real deal.
I knew that's where you were going with
that. When I hear that from him unsolicited, that goes a long way. I know they said it up there a lot. Kevin Demoff said it and Les Snead said it, but, you know, I was teammates with Marshall.
Yeah.
And I've always talked with Marshall about everything offense. Everything I talk about with offense, I go through him first. And unsolicited, when I hear that he likes this guy, that goes a long way for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So one of the things that got brought up in the press conference was the type of people that the Rams sort of solicited opinions from in order to go through this search. So, you know, Demoff brought up guys like Tony Dungy, like Bill Polian, and then, of course, like a Marshall Faulk. So apparently Marshall Faulk had dinner with the sort of coaching search contingent, if you will, the Les Sneeds, the Kevin Demoff, Tony Pestors of the world. So they met all of them with Sean McVay. And so, you know, Marshall Faulk was talking about how he went going into that. He told Danny Kloppinger in an interview that we were doing in this room where we are right now. But he was saying that he felt, you know, a little bit of trepidation, a little bit of reservations going into this because, you know, this is a young guy and thinking about the NFL and knowing the NFL, how he knows the NFL, he said that just wasn't necessarily sure that a young guy would be the right fit for a young group like the Rams are. But then he said he came away really impressed, and he said in here, you know, I am man enough to admit when I'm wrong, and I called Les Snead and I was like, this is a guy who could be your next head coach.
Wow. I mean, that's big. I mean,
Yeah, I
get the X's and the O's. I mean, Marshall is he's an offensive savant. He loves the offensive side of the game.
I don't think enough people kind of realize just how much of him being this offensive savant was so helpful to you guys when you had the greatest show on turf.
Well, see, I don't want to throw anybody under the bus.
I don't think you are.
If Marshall was here, I'd bring up the story, but way back when, there was a coach that handed Marshall a playbook, and Marshall handed it back and said, no, thank you. I'm dead serious. Dead serious. Dead panned it. No joke. And I asked him today, why did you hand the playbook back? He said, just, it didn't have a lot of solutions. It had a lot of plays, not a lot of solutions. So, I mean, it's more than just about X's and O's and, you know, you want to run belly this way or zone that way.
Sure.
It's how are you going to adjust to what they're doing on the other side?
Right.
So he's looking for answers on how to put the ball into the end zone. So when you start to hear that out of Marshall's mouth about Sean McVay, it makes sense.
Yes.
That Marshall likes him offensively. Now, stepping in front of the room is a little bit different.
Mm-hmm.
And I could see why Marshall would be a little hesitant. I would be a little hesitant. Me too. Sitting in the back with Ray Agnew. I mean, Ray is older than me. And every coach that we've had while we were players have always been older guys, older than us.
Sure.
Now, can you imagine sitting in the room with a guy in front of you who's younger? I can't.
Right.
It's beyond me. It's beyond my way of thinking. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, that is yet to be determined. That is a work in progress. I mean, he is the youngest coach in the NFL. So.
In NFL history. Not just
NFL
that.
History. Yeah. I mean,
no coach has ever been hired at the age of 30. He turns 31, you know, in a couple of weeks. Think about 11 days. He
right.
turns 21. Or 21. 31.
Yeah.
But I think the point still stands. Like, this is a really young guy, and so how is he going to be able to command that room?
As long as he just keeps it to what he knows and sticks to the things that took him to this point,
mm-hmm.
and make sure that the guys understand that and understand your passion, you won't start seeing the number. You won't start seeing how young this guy
yeah.
looks. You'll start seeing a head coach.
Yeah. You know, so this is maybe a weird thing to bring up, but like when people talk about this age number, and the age number is going to be brought up a lot, I think part of it that I sort of maybe connect to is my age when I started this job. You know, I was very young.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't necessarily need to bring up how young I was, but mm-hmm. I was like coming right out of college. And so that's not necessarily something that I think people would expect, that somebody would come out of college and you're able to do this job. And it's not
right.
easy. And I think, you know, I was surrounded with good people, and that is part of what helped me be able to do the job to the ability that I've done it. And I think I've grown in this role and da-da-da-da. Not that this is being like a head coach, but I think
it's almost the same. Yeah, I got you.
No, it's something that I feel like
yeah.
I can relate to a little bit.
I understand.
And
yeah.
in that, you know, there are a lot of reasons why you would not hire somebody who is my age to do the job that I do.
True.
And then when I do it, you know, people don't think of me as that young.
But except you're not walking in the building with his pedigree.
No, and like, I definitely
it's
wasn't.
Something I learned
yeah,
from you
true.
Online watching the coaching search and
okay.
when you did the whole breakdown of McVay, the three things you need to know.
Yeah.
He's been brought up in this business, man.
Mm-hmm.
He's a lifer.
Yeah.
He's got a wealth of resources he can tap into anytime he wants to. That's huge.
Yeah.
So when you see him, looks 30.
Mm-hmm.
When he speaks, you can tell this guy is older than
yeah.
what he is. So,
yeah,
yeah, I mean, there's going to be some learning curve there. I'm sure there's going to be some nerves when he has to address the team for the
yeah.
first time, and, you know, all that stuff starts to kick in. As we get closer to the season, as we get closer to the mini camps and all that, he'll become more comfortable. But, yeah, I mean, there's going to be some learning on both sides. I can remember the first time Dick Vermeil cried in front of us.
Yeah.
That's never happened before. Really. I mean, I'm sitting there. He starts to bawl, like tear up and starts to bawl in front of us. I look over and I see Orlando Pace. Orlando's looking back at me. He's like, is this dude crying? I'm like, I think so. I think he's crying. But it was shocking the first time. The second time, the third or fourth time, it's normal. It's just him. It becomes your guy, your head coach. So at your third or fourth meeting with a 31-year-old head coach,
yeah.
it's going to be old hat.
Okay.
When he's in your face,
mm-hmm.
ripping you, a new one for messing up a play,
yeah,
yeah, you're not going to remember he's 31 years old.
You're going to
remember
he's
the head coach.
Yeah.
That's all.
All right, so we're going to go aside, but do you remember the story of why Vermeil was crying?
I think he was...
The first time.
I think he was talking about a guy he actually cut.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
He was sad?
Very sad. Big on that. He was huge. He didn't want to cut the guy. He was making a point... and actually, the guy he was making the point about made our football team. A guy named Tony Horn.
Okay.
He was
return
specialist, but this is before he could return. He was a gunner.
Okay.
And we had this drill going on where Tony Horn fought three guys by himself and won.
Mm-hmm.
And he told him in the meeting, never forget this, if you can't make it here, I'll call every team in the league until you find the job.
Hmm.
That's how much I feel about you. That's how much I like you. Then he started talking about a guy in Philadelphia, and he started to tear up. And I could still see Orlando's face. He's like, is this dude crying? Like, yes, he's crying. But you get it. Once you get into it and you learn about the head coach, he learns about you, and your passions are intertwined, and your desires are the same.
Yeah.
You want to be the best, and you want to win. You forget about guys crying. You forget how
sure.
old he looks. You
mm-hmm.
forget how young he looks. It's just the message that's important.
The thing I thought was really interesting that McVay continued to bring up in there was the culture of we instead of the culture of me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and how...
Sounds very Vermeil-like.
It, really?
Very Vermeil-like.
Interesting.
When we won the Super Bowl in 99, the entire building, top to bottom, was invested.
Yeah.
Everybody.
That's what he was talking
yes.
about. The fact that, you know, you have to... be all pushing together in the same direction. You have to all pull in the same direction. Mm-hmm. Everybody's got to have the same goal. Everybody's got to feel like they are a part of every success and then every failure mm-hmm. that happens in and around the building.
When I got to the league '94, I hardly remember. I was a rookie. Chuck Knox was the head coach, mm-hmm. and he was on his way out. I didn't know. Rich Brooks came in the second and third year, my second and third year. It was a little disconnected, which means when we won, everyone's happy. Yeah. When we lost, only this side of the building was unhappy. This side of the building was going on like business as usual. Mm-hmm. When Vermeil came in, we lost a lot more than we won until we won the whole thing.
Right.
But the whole building was in tune. When we took an L, the whole building took the L.
Yeah.
When we won, the whole building took the W. And that all came when we weren't even in the room.
Sure.
It was him talking to those people. It was him going to each and every different area in the building, making sure they were in tune with what was going on the field. So, I mean, that's something that's, when it's together, it's magic.
Yeah.
And it slowly starts to fall apart, and you hardly even notice it.
Mm-hmm.
But usually when things like this happen, when you have a coaching change, that's the first thing they want to throw out
mm-hmm.
because it's so important. If you go to every championship team, of the last 10 years and beyond,
yeah.
they're all going to say the same thing.
Yeah, probably.
The whole building was invested in this championship
yeah.
or this championship run.
How does that kind of get together? You know, as somebody that's been through it, what are some of the things that make it coalesce and gel?
Well, everybody has a job. You know, if you can remember, the main thing is the main thing, and the main thing is football and what's
yeah.
going on the field, practice, what have you. So it's not coddling the players. I mean, the players have a job to do.
Right.
If you don't do your job, you're fired, you can get cut, what have you. But everyone has a job to do to put the best product on the field on game day.
Right.
Right? So if someone doesn't take their job as seriously as the next, that starts to snowball.
Mm-hmm.
And then eventually that winds up on the field.
Yeah.
I know it's funny to say, but go back to the whole Jeff Fisher, Eric Dickerson thing.
Yes.
When that started, eventually that starts to filter down to the players,
right.
and then you have a New Orleans throughout.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's what we were talking about. I mean, after the Patriots game, right?
Mm-hmm.
When that news leaked of the extension, when everybody was on the bus on the way to the stadium.
Deflated.
It does. It deflates you. And I think, you know, I'm not trying to rehash old hash, especially on the day that we, you know, the
right.
Rams have the new coach. But I think it's one of those things where it's, okay, are we pulling in the same direction? Are we making sure we're shutting out these distractions? And I think, you know, when you talk about, oh, culture change, changing the culture,
mm-hmm.
shifting mindsets and things like that, what McVay was saying in the press conference, I thought resonated.
Big time. I can remember Vermeil standing up in front of us and talking about appearances, player appearances. I mean, stuff that coaches don't usually talk about.
Mm-hmm.
But he talks about the staff. Hey, look, they've worked hard for you.
Mm-hmm.
So when they call you for an appearance, I want you guys there. I want you to show up on time. I want you know, to look good, represent
yeah.
this team. All that stuff matters.
Mm-hmm.
If not, then guys will start cutting corners, and then all of a sudden it's compartmentalized and everybody's separate,
right.
and it's hard to get out of that culture.
Mm-hmm.
But when you start bringing everybody in, and you up the ante, and you raise the bar, and it's championship or bust, and everybody in this building feels the same way, eventually that's going to work. That's going to filter out to the field.
What did you think of hearing about the sort of search committee and how large it was, I guess, in terms of the way the Rams were going outside
Good.
And getting those consultants, like
Good.
The Tony Dungys, like the Bill Polians?
Heck yeah, it should have been like a movie, man. You should have gone to, like, Africa to found a guy. I'm serious. If you heard of a coaching guy in Timbuktu, let's go check him out too.
Yeah.
I'm serious.
Yeah.
I mean, if the one thing that used to drive me back in the day, and I had teammates that felt the same way,
mm-hmm.
we wanted to win. No doubt.
Yeah.
We wanted to experience the playoffs, Super Bowl championships.
But doesn't everybody? Yeah.
We were so bitter watching the 49ers do it year in and year out.
Mm-hmm.
It's got to suck watching the Seahawks do it year in and year out.
Yeah.
That's what I mean. So, yeah, if you're tired of the Patriots being on top, then you're going to have to build to beat them. So when
mm-hmm.
you fire a coach and you're looking for the next one that's going to take you to the promised land, then look, the far corners of the universe aren't far enough to find the right guy.
Yeah.
Now, it seems like they found their guy. He's here right now. But I love that their search committee was huge.
Yeah.
I love that they talked to everyone and it was exhaustive. Great.
Yeah.
Perfect. That's the way it needs to be.
Yeah. I agree. I just, and I like that the way they went about it was not just going with, you know, those old front office guys, but to bring in somebody like a Marshall Faulk, mm-hmm. who knows offense like he does, and then to not just have him be a part of it, but then, you know, you sprinkle in guys like a Jared Goff, like an Aaron Donald, two guys who are clearly very important to this team going forward, and have them meet with Sean McVay before, you know, you make the actual hiring. I thought that was a good sign of sort of the way everybody's kind of in on this. You know,
oh, no,
I mean?
Doubt. I would have talked to AD. I would have talked to Goff. I mean, guys in uniform. The guys that were here today that showed up to meet the new head coach. Those are the important guys, your core guys, the guys you put fences around to make sure they stay Rams because they're going to help you win. But, you know, talking to Marshall, he's not only the smartest offensive guy in California. It might be the entire United States as far as a former player mm-hmm. is concerned, an analyst. We just had the same discussion. I said, man, as much as they talked about you in the press conference, they needed another seat up there for you.
Yeah,
that's
maybe.
Not him. That's not what he does. But that endorsement doesn't come lightly.
Right.
When Marshall says, I like this guy, I like the way his mind thinks offensively, mm-hmm. that's huge.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can, like I said, I can count on one hand the amount of people he said this guy is actually worth what they're paying him.
Right.
Yeah, it doesn't happen that often.
Which is, I don't know, that's the most interesting part to me. I mean, there are a lot of elements that made me feel a little bit more, that made me feel like this was a really good choice. But I think the way that Marshall Faulk was talking about him, the way they described him talking about him in the press conference, and then to hear Marshall Faulk myself mm-hmm. talk about Sean McVay, and, you know, guys, I guess you can watch that video on therams.com. That to me was...
Did you just plug something?
I did. Do I not work for...
Did you just plug something as we're having a conversation?
Yeah, I did.
You can't plug. What is this, a Truman Show?
No, I'll plug what I want to plug.
Go ahead.
It's not even my interview.
Go ahead.
But we're talking about it and we're referencing it. I want to make sure that people can know
at
where
DeMarco
they can
Far
watch it.
One, since we're plugging.
Yeah, at DeMarco Far One, at Miles A. Simmons, Miles with a Y, at Rams NFL.
Right.
Yeah, there's plenty of things we can plug. Anyway, my point is simple.
Yes.
This that it was fascinating to hear Marshall Faulk talk about that himself, you know, especially, I mean, you hear him on the NFL Network, you hear him wherever, but to hear him talk about how he had dinner, how he came away so impressed, and how he admitted, you know, I might have been wrong about this,
right?
That impressed me.
I can't wait to get into minicamp.
Yeah,
I can't wait to get past free agency. I mean, I'm excited about...
I agree with you.
I'm excited about bringing guys back. I
sure.
mean, having those conversations about which guys you want to pay, keep mm-hmm. on your roster right now, going through the combine, going through the draft. Let's get to the field.
Yeah.
I want to jump start from January all the way into July.
Right?
Let's just get to the field. Because there's going to be a lot of, you know, talking between now and then.
Yeah.
A lot of stuff coming up between now and then. But
yeah, I know. I'm going to do a lot of it.
It only matters what happens... On the dirt,
yeah.
On the grass, in the Coliseum, or on the road.
Yeah.
That's the only way we're going to know if this is the right thing. But as of right now, love it.
Yeah.
Love the guy's energy.
Yeah, I think
love the endorsements that come with him.
Yeah, and I think just him as an offensive mind, heard from Jared Goff after the press conference. He talked to the media over sort of to the side, and when he was talking about how he met with McVay when they were doing this process, and then he was saying that, you know, the system is quarterback friendly, and he was looking at things that were going on in Washington even before, you know, McVay became a candidate or whatever, and he said, you know, I like some of the stuff that is coming out of here. And then he mentioned that, you know, when he got to meet McVay, they hit it off, they were talking, and like everything just seemed to click between them. I mean, what else is he going to say, obviously, on the day that the new head coach gets hired? But it wasn't, to me, it wasn't nothing that he would bring all of that up and that they would seem to have such a good rapport, even though, you know, we're like a day into McVay's tenure.
No doubt. And Jared's going to have to get a whole lot better.
No
remember,
question.
He's sharing a stadium with a Hall of Famer now.
Oh, no.
With Phillip Rivers.
He's not.
Well, StubHub, kind of.
He will,
sharing a city
eventually,
with a Hall of Famer.
Eventually, they will share the stadium in 2019, yes.
Yes. So
I get what you're saying.
He needs to get a whole lot better. But, I mean, going all the way back to, what, 3 years ago? I didn't think Kirk Cousins would be here.
Oh, nobody did.
I didn't think he would be this good. I didn't think he'd still be a starter.
Nobody did.
If he can do that with Kirk Cousins, then I want to see what he can do with Jared Goff.
Me too.
I want to. If you can bring the best out of Kirk Cousins, something I didn't even see that was there. A lot of people had no idea that Kirk Cousins could be that good, that accurate. So If you can work that magic with him, then great. We've got a Jared Goff waiting for you right now. So as long as he's receptive to coaching, that's going to be great.
Yeah.
The offensive acumen is there.
Yes.
Yeah, the know-how, the whys and the whos and who to get and how to get them. That guy just walked into the building. He's coming in with a wealth of knowledge. Mm-hmm. So can you transfer that into the body of Jared Goff? We'll find out.
Yeah, the thing that the other thing I found interesting that was sort of coming out of Washington was all the folks that were reaching out to him. This got brought up in the press conference as well. Guys like DeSean Jackson, who, you know, called him and was like, basically just to help thank him and wish him well. I mean, mm-hmm. you see these tributes on social media all over the place, and it sort of speaks to the fact that he was not just, I don't know, a body, you know what mm-hmm. I'm saying? Like, yeah, everybody talks about how Jay Gruden is a good offensive mind, and he is, and I'm sure he is, but it's not like Sean McVay was just the understudy that wasn't really doing anything in the background. You know, he was really a part of that, and to see the real good pros that have come out and supported him and wished him well and thanked him for his contributions there in Washington, I think is pretty impressive as well.
I remember when I was a rookie, I hardly even saw the guy, but I heard later on, because he came back to us, Mike Martz slept on a couch when I was a rookie, when he was just trying to break in to the business. And then once you see him grow and you start to see him as a coach, you could probably tell that guy is going to be in front of a group at some point. Mm-hmm. He's going to be tapped as a head coach at some point. So I bet that's what the other guys are seeing out of McVay way back when.
Yeah.
When you can, the maturity, and I heard that three or four times in the maturity factor, mm-hmm. how some guys can't, when they come from the field as a player and they go into coaching, they can't turn the player side off.
Yeah.
You know, and they might be great coaches. They have great knowledge.
Yeah.
But they can't turn that side off. But certain guys can. And 9 times out of 10, those are the guys that get interviewed for the coordinating jobs and then head coaching jobs. So, okay. No shock. If you can help an all-pro get better, he's going to love you for life.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you can help guys find the end zone or pick up one more first down per game, they're going to love you forever. The hardest thing to do to me is to sit in front of a room of a bunch of pros and tell them what they need to do to get better. Mm-hmm. Remember, these are guys that are sitting on $1 million. They get paid a lot of money to play this game.
They do. A lot of them get paid more than you as a head coach.
They think they're pretty good already.
Yeah.
And you're going to tell them that they can improve?
Right.
Well, you better be able to stand on that. So when you do get that job and you get those phone calls, that does mean a lot.
Yeah, I think another thing I saw in my research of McVay is, I think Monday Morning Quarterback did an article profiling him back in August, July, whenever it was in 2016. And Chris Cooley was quoted in there saying, man, like, I wish that this guy could have been my tight ends coach for my entire career because he was so detail oriented. He did so much to help me that I could have been so much better if this guy was with me. And I thought that was really interesting. And then Jason Reed of The Undefeated was tweeting out a story last night, basically, and he was saying that how Jordan Reed, no relation, R-E-E-D versus R-E-I-D. But anyway, so the tight end.
Throw another plug out there.
At Miles A. Simmons, at DeMarco Far 1.
There you go. Go ahead.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Anyway, so he was talking about how Reed would be with McVay like nights before the games. They were in the hotel and they would like set up chairs in meeting room and then they would go over the plays. This is back, you know, from 2010 to 2013 when McVay was the tight ends coach. And so 2014, Gruden comes in and McVay gets promoted to offensive coordinator. And, you know, Reed reaches out to McVay and he's like, man, will you still do this with me even though you're not my position coach anymore? You know, you're the offensive coordinator. And he still did. So again, it's these detail oriented things. It's the, you know, he takes the time to develop those relationships with the players, and they clearly mean a lot to him. And it's all of that that I think makes him a really good head coaching candidate.
Right. Well, the essence of coaching is teaching.
Yes.
Yeah. So, yes. I mean, he just reminds me of a tireless teacher that will spend his Saturdays tutoring
mm-hmm.
because he wants you to understand the material.
Yeah.
He wants you to get better as a player. So that stuff doesn't shock me. I remember a guy, this is so funny, his name was Fred Stokes. I think he was in his 10th year when I came into the league. So we had a new D-line coach. I mean, mm-hmm. full of just pee and vinegar. I mean, I'm just this guy, just straight sandblaster mouth.
Gross.
I mean, he is just coming at you with everything.
Disgusting.
And it's all negative, right? So Fred had been in the league 10 years, and I think he'd already earned a Super Bowl ring with the Redskins.
Okay.
Right? So we're doing a drill. Fred gets in a three-point stance, and the D-line coach stops the drill and says, man, I don't think you can play in this league with that stance. And the whole group just stopped and looked. This guy's been playing 10 years. He's got a ring.
You don't think this one can play in the league? What are you talking about?
I think he can play in the league. Right. He's just fine. But from that moment on, he lost the vets.
Of course.
That stuff. See, mm-hmm. that's a little too much. But
yeah,
if you go to Fred and try to help him become better,
yeah.
If you try to give him tips to become a better player, you win the room instead of the opposite.
Yeah. The other thing I thought was pretty interesting from McVay was when he was talking about, you know what I got to do? All right, before we do, I got to stop saying thing, you know, like the other thing. One thing I think. I'm being very self-critical right now on this podcast as we're about halfway through it. DeMarco like starts looking at the camera when I go
like MTV. He's like doing a confessional.
No, I don't like. I mean, like
work on you in your own time.
This is my own time.
No, this is us. This is our time. Work on you later. This is us right now. Go ahead.
Well, what McVay said was interesting.
Thank you.
That was he was talking about being. A coach for all 22. You know, he's an all 22 player philosophy. I don't think I've ever heard somebody sort of describe that in that particular way before.
I've seen it once.
Really?
And I'm sure, well, that's not true because, sorry, coach. If you're Coach Vermeil, I love you to death.
Uh-oh.
But he would come to our side of the building, the defensive side, to sleep.
No!
He would.
Oh,
he would.
No.
It's not that he doesn't understand defense.
Yeah.
That's just not his deal.
Okay.
He was in there for a reason.
Yeah.
Because the head coach is in the room. Everybody sits up straight. You know what I mean?
Of course.
But you look back,
and
he's catching Z's.
He's knocked out.
A little bit different. But God rest his soul, Denny Green. Denny Green, when I was an intern coach, when he was in Arizona, this was back in, I want to say, 04, 05, whenever he was there. Kurt Warner was the third string quarterback back then.
Yeah.
Yeah. John Navarre was the backup.
Well, that would have been maybe 06.
To Josh McCown.
That must have been 05, 06.
It was way
one of those
back.
Years,
way,
but, yeah.
I think Matt Leinart might have been there or just got there. Or, anyway. No, he wasn't there yet. But
work
anyway.
On this on your own time, Marco.
But just anyway, being in the room with Denny Green and his coaches, watching him coach his coaches, right? Mm-hmm. Number one, it almost talked me out of coaching.
Really? Why?
Because it was brutal, man.
Huh.
If you think he's hard on players... No, he's twice as hard on coaches.
Okay.
And I think that's universal.
Because it's the coach's job to teach the players?
Right.
Yeah.
If the player screws up, it's not the player's fault. It's fault.
Because you taught him wrong.
Right.
Okay,
but
got it.
But literally, he could coach all 22. He could coach any position. You can make him a corners coach.
Yeah.
He'd have great corners. You can make him a running back coach. Mm-hmm. He'd have great running backs. The guy just has a complete knowledge of football. I think those guys, we've kind of gotten away from that.
Yeah.
In professional football.
I think so, too.
This could be... a return to that sort of guy where you can coach everything.
And I think that's part of the appeal, right? Because what he was saying in context was that he was talking about John Gruden and said, John Gruden was sort of the one who taught me to see football from a 22 position perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't ever necessarily remember hearing that it said in that particular way. Not that I'm saying that, you know, other coaches don't see the game like that, or some coaches are just defensive guys, offensive guys, whatever. And there are different ways of being a head coach. But I think for him as an offensive guy and someone who received the offensive endorsement of someone like a Marshall Faulk, it's really interesting for me to hear him talk about, okay, it's not, you know, like I'm not just the offense guy, you know, there's 22 positions on offense and defense combined, and all of them are important.
Yeah, well, look, if you're trying to attack a defense, you're going to have respect for it. Like he said in his press conference, he looks for new and different ways to attack defense.
Yes.
Which means he studies that side of the ball, and he has a lot of respect for what they do on that side of the football. I think that's important. I think there's a little bit of arrogance that happens when you either hire a defensive guy or just an offensive guy. That I run this side of the room and that's it.
Right.
I can score points and that's it. Or I can keep people from scoring and that's all I know how to do. Everything else is up to that guy.
Yeah.
Well, when you have a complete football coach leading your football team, it's going to make you better.
It
no
absolutely
doubt.
Is. Yeah. So as we've talked a lot about the offense, but, you know, defensively.
Man, I had
Wade
a heart
Phillips.
Attack. I had a heart attack.
Heart attack.
I had a heart attack. I love Wade Phillips.
In a good way? Like. The heart attack sounds
bad. I am a Phillips fan going all the way back to his dad, Bum Phillips.
Yes.
Yeah, in Houston because of Earl Campbell.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I started with the Phillips people. But
yeah.
He's a 3-4 coach.
He is a 3-4 coach, traditional.
That's like speaking Latin to me. I mean, whoa.
But.
Schematically, Robert Quinn could be your Terrell Suggs, so to speak. He can stand him up. You can put him down in third down situation, get after the quarterback. So that doesn't shock. That doesn't scare me at all.
Uh-huh.
The one thing I was worried about, and you know what I'm getting to.
Absolutely, because it would be the one thing I'd be worried about, too.
What happens to Aaron Donald
absolutely.
In the 3-4?
Number 99, yeah.
Yes, because I saw what happened to Darnell Dockett in Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
Darnell Dockett was a Pro Bowl 3 technique for the Cardinals, and then they went to a 3-4, and you just lost him.
Right.
In my opinion. He lost some of his effectiveness. Mm-hmm. So when I heard that the Rams are going to a 3-4, I worried about Aaron Donald. Yeah. Well, I hear that you can still use a 3-4 and have a 3 technique.
Yes.
Yeah.
So then that's sort of the point I want to get at here.
Yes.
Is because, you know, even though you're bringing in a Wade Phillips, who I think Wade Phillips, we can say he's one of the best, if not the best defensive coordinator in the entire National Football League.
Yes.
You know, he's had, I think, he's been in the league, what, 30 as a coordinator or head coach, 38 years,
longer
34,
than
8 years, a lot longer than I've been alive, yeah. and a lot longer than Sean McVay has even
longer
been alive.
Longer than they've been alive,
I know.
Yes.
He started his first year in the NFL as a D-line coach for the Houston Oilers, Wade Phillips, was 10 years before Sean McVay was born.
Right.
1976.
Yes.
So, like, he has forgotten more football than I will ever know.
I don't think he's forgotten any.
Well, he probably hasn't.
You're probably
yeah.
right.
Yeah. But the thing is, and to get back to Aaron Donald, is that McVay, you know, sitting in this room, was saying Aaron Donald is probably the best 3 technique in football.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to come in here and tell him to not be a 3 technique. Why would I do that? So what the thing about Wade Phillips' defensive scheme is that even though it's a 3-4, there are elements of it that are more or less like a 4-3. So you've got the weak side end that is sort of stand up, and that in maybe a perfect world would be a Robert Quinn type, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you've still got the rest of your line that would then line up, and Aaron Donald can still be a 3 technique and still do what we're really used to seeing him do. So,
hit quarterbacks.
Yes.
All the time.
Hit quarterbacks, you know, do whatever
time.
He needs to do.
Yes.
It's one of these things where McVay has talked a lot about fitting the scheme to his player's strengths. And
right.
he set it for both sides of the ball. And looking at Wade Phillips and what Phillips has been able to do in this league, that's something I think he's done for a long time.
And don't get me wrong, J.J. Watt has changed 3-4s.
Yeah.
You can be a terror from a 3-4. 3-4 is where defensive linemen used to go to die. All you're doing is basically holding up guys for linebackers to make
oh,
plays.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
That way, yeah. Okay.
Watt
yeah.
has kind of changed things.
Yeah.
And we've seen Aaron Donald line up on tackles and beat them.
We have.
We've seen him line up in a 5 technique or even as wide as a 9.
Yes.
All the way on the outside
yes.
and get to the quarterback.
Not
so
often, but we've seen it.
If you can play, you can play.
Yeah.
So, look, 3-4 is just how you start. Once the ball snapped, you go play football. We always say this. This is a rule,
mm-hmm.
and you'll love this.
Okay.
Your first step, or your first two steps are always for the defense call as a player. So when you put your hand down or you get in your defensive stance.
Your first two
steps are for the defense call.
That's why I can't play defense.
Why?
What's the next? What are your next steps?
Your first two steps are your responsibility.
Right. And?
Then go play ball.
Really?
Yes.
You have to be able to do better than that.
No. Your first two steps are for the defense call.
That's it?
That's it. And then go
then
play ball.
Then how do you... That, see, and this is... Okay, we've talked a little bit about this before, how I could not play defense when I was in high school.
Yeah.
Like, you know...
It doesn't
surprise
me.
I know, it doesn't surprise you.
Yeah.
This is why I'm
you don't
you know,
make
I'm a,
defensive players, they're born.
I know. It's
yeah.
why I'm a reporter and you're a former player. Because I'm like 6
right.
foot, you know,
right.
what, however many pounds.
Right.
And like,
You are an offensive guy, aren't you?
Totally
you're an offensive lineman.
You're
an overthinker, aren't you?
Honestly, I cannot wait to just have a chance to pick McVay's brain. Like, I hope we get to do it on
Good
this podcast
Lord.
At some point.
Go find the ball and tackle it. It's not that hard.
No, but if you're talking about you only take the first two steps or the play,
theoretically
and then whatever
speaking,
it is.
That means everybody's
get
on the same
here.
Page. No freelancers.
Yeah.
No freelancers.
Except for number 99.
If you make plays. Production equal tolerance.
Yeah, exactly.
Production
yeah.
equal tolerance. But your first two steps are for the defense hard, right? And
yeah.
then you find the ball and go tackle it.
Yeah.
That's every defense known to man, 3-4, 4-3.
Yeah.
Whatever you have.
Okay, fine.
Yeah. As long as it's being coached properly
mm-hmm.
and you're not coaching the reaction out of the player.
Right.
Yeah, how to read and react.
Exactly.
But
that's
he's got to be
a
disciplined.
With.
Right. He's got to be disciplined for the defense and what you just called to make sure it's sound. But once you take those two steps and you find ball, Fly to it.
Just get to it.
Get to it.
Just get there.
Right.
All right. So what I was looking at for on my phone was there was a quote that Wade Phillips had about his offensive, his defensive philosophy. That he said it. I got this from the Denver Post. Mm-hmm. It was an article that was posted just before Super Bowl 50 last February. And he was saying was, we try to fit what the players can do in the defense rather than saying, okay, we're a 4-3 or a 2-gap 3-4. We're a team where if a guy can stunt and rush the passer, we let him do that. If a guy is a power guy, we try to let him be that. It's all what individual players can do.
Right.
So does that make you feel better?
Well, it does. I mean, if you want to bring a 3-4, a 2-gapping 3-4, I think the only guy that's really that fits that mold might be two guys. Cam Thomas.
Mm-hmm.
Could be a 2-gapper.
Yeah.
That could be your nose tackle.
Yeah.
If you want to slide Michael Brockers out to a 5.
Perhaps.
Because we've always said Michael Brockers is suited to be a 5. In the 3-4 defense.
Yeah,
and guess what you're in
true.
Now. So, yeah, and you've got the edge rusher in Robert Quinn.
If he stays healthy.
That's a big if.
It is,
but if he's on the field, it changes that defense.
Oh, absolutely.
It changes that offense you're playing when he's on the field.
And it always has.
Yes.
So I think one of the things now that we're going to have to look at, as I use my verbal crutch once again, is how players are going to be able to fit this, even those players that are free agents. You know, you've got some big free agents coming up for the Rams, particularly on defense, with guys like a Trumaine Johnson, with a TJ McDonald. Those guys in particular, you got to hope that you can get them to stick around and to buy into this, because I think for what Wade Phillips would want to do, they're going to be very important.
Get what you can get. Look, player first, right? So get what you can get. Find the right fit for you. If you're Trumaine Johnson.
Yeah, and
if you're
let me
TJ
make it
McDonald.
Clear. Wholeheartedly endorse that. Because you're a player and you only have a certain amount of time in this league, and you got to get yours.
You got to get what you can get while you can get it. But if you go back to, 2014? And think about that secondary. And then think about it if you lose Trumaine and TJ.
Yeah.
That's your entire secondary in the span of 2 seasons. You've got to be able to hold on to some of your good players in the back end. And the guys they brought up, LaMarcus Joyner has been a godsend. He's been a find. But you've got proven guys in the secondary that you might want to try to keep in a Rams uniform.
I agree.
Now, everyone has to be on board with that.
Yeah.
Some guys are searching for the most amount of money they can find. Some guys are searching for the right fit.
Mm-hmm.
So from my perspective, the right fit is right here.
Mm-hmm.
But there could be other spots where you get more money and you like where you're going. So
It
is what it is. Free agency is a crapshoot, but I hope you keep those guys in uniform.
I would agree with you. One of the guys that will be sticking around, that we know will be sticking around as a coach, and that is Bones Fossil. John Fossil will be with the Rams continuing as the special teams coordinator. And I think that's just one thing that everybody is really positively happy about.
Yeah, I'm happy. I love his coverage units.
Yeah.
I love the way punt cover has been great. The punt team has been very creative. Johnny Hecker is the best punter in the league. If I'm Bones Fossil, the last thing I want to do is leave that guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if I'm Johnny Hecker, the last thing I want to do is lose my special teams coach. So, yeah, that was a no-brainer.
Yeah,
no
I
doubt.
Totally agree.
Yeah, as soon as what happened with Coach Fisher, we all thought he's going to be the guy. And sure enough, it turned out to be that guy.
Yeah.
Just like a Sean McVay. You can tell those guys that have that quality, the it factor. He was the pick on this staff. Makes sense.
It was one of those things where that first press conference, it was kind of like, uh-oh. You know, like, man, because you know the kind of person that he is, and you want to see him succeed in it. And in the role, I guess you would say, and you know, you're looking at him, and it was an overwhelming day.
Yeah,
I think, you know, because usually you don't have the situation where, all right, you know, you've got the coaches being let go, and then you got to go practice all on the same day, and it became that because you know you're playing on a Thursday night, so you have to practice on Monday. So I think the way he was able to handle it, despite the fact you know that the Rams didn't win a game, I think you know the games are what they are once you let go of your coach, right? So I think just him and his attitude and his positivity and sort of keeping that continuity, just a little bit of continuity for the staff, I don't think that's a bad thing.
A familiar face.
Yeah.
All the guys. Remember, I mean, I don't think outside of the former head coach, I don't think anybody on this staff knows this team like Bones Fossil.
That's true.
He talks to the entire roster.
Yeah.
So if you're an incoming coach, that knowledge is invaluable.
Yeah.
Makes sense to keep him around. Funny, I had a cousin that shared a room his entire life. The older brother had his own room. Older brother gets in an argument with his mom. Mom throws him out. Not really, but just throws him out.
Okay.
Symbolically throws him out. Says to the little brother, now you have your own room. How do you think he felt?
Probably very confused.
Right, big time.
What do I do now?
Right,
this sounds awesome to me. I would love to have
my own space.
Yeah, because I'm an only child.
But your oldest brother's being thrown out. But you get your own room.
I can't. You know, it's funny. Like, I'm the type of person, because I grew up the way I grew up. You know, like, I'm an only child. That's what I'm saying. My first friend was Nathan. This is a good friend. We did. I remember going to SeaWorld. It's one of my first memories. We went to SeaWorld in Cleveland.
Okay.
With
Nathan.
Yeah, and his little brother, Danny.
And Danny.
Mm-hmm. Nathan
and you're not friends with him now.
I mean, we're friends on Facebook.
Wasted memory.
I wouldn't say it's a wasted memory.
Who are you going to talk to SeaWorld about?
I don't know.
See, that's what I mean. Wasted memory. Call those people. Yeah, Facebook. There you go. Come on. Hook up with them.
Anyway.
You got to do it. Anyway.
All right. Let's talk about this subject. I don't remember.
Anyway, yeah, go ahead.
I don't know. Let's talk about playoff games.
Yeah,
last week, you were wrong about Oakland.
That was 3-1.
You were right about all of the other ones, but you were totally wrong about Oakland.
You picked Oakland.
I was 4-0. No, I picked Houston. You picked Oakland.
You picked Houston to beat Oakland. I picked the Raiders. That's right. I'm sorry.
Yeah, because why would you pick a team that had a rookie quarterback going for its first
win? You know
what? In his first start.
I guess Carr is better than we thought.
How is he better than you thought? Not better than I thought. I knew how good he was.
But my goodness. I mean, that's a huge drop-off
from him
to the other guy.
Because Connor Cook, that was his first ever NFL start.
Oh, my. It looked like it.
Yeah. Well.
Jeez.
I don't know. What are you expecting?
God, I feel so bad for Del Rio. I mean, this was your squad, this was your opportunity.
Yeah.
And wow, you lose your best player.
Yes.
That told me that Carr is your best guy.
He should be your best guy.
Right.
Right?
If you get beat by Houston and you're only missing one guy.
Houston is one of those teams though where if they get enough, they can win. You know what I mean?
Get enough what? Points?
Because of their defense.
True. Clowney did play well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they have the number one defense in terms of yards in the entire 16 season.
They have the Patriots, right?
Yeah.
How close do you think they'll come to beating the Patriots?
I think it'll be 13-17 to, like, I don't know.
It's going
to
be a tight ball game?
No. I think it'll be like 13 points.
Oh.
No. Wait. I'm sorry. I think it'll be like a 13-20 game or like, I don't know, 30-13. Like,
if all you're sporting is a pretty good defense, I think you got problems against the Patriots.
Absolutely, but I think the Patriots' offense also has some issues.
What are the issues? They don't have Gronk?
Yeah.
Is Tom Brady still suiting up?
Yeah.
Just fine.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, they did have an extra week to prepare.
Yeah,
right?
they'll be fine.
They'll be all right.
Yeah,
all right, so we're both picking New England in that game, obviously.
Is anybody picking Houston?
I don't think so.
Is Bill O'Brien picking Houston?
I don't know that he is. No, I'm just kidding. All right, that's the second game on Saturday night, 5:15 Pacific. But first game is Seattle-Atlanta. This is the one that I'm really looking forward to this weekend, and I sort of wish it were not. Well, actually, I'm looking forward to all these as I look at the matchups.
Before you pick, who are you rooting for?
Who are you rooting for? In this game?
Yes. Who do you want to win this game?
I don't know. I just want to see a good game. I mean, I like the story of Dallas. I think that's a cool story. No, I'm sorry.
Seattle-Atlanta.
Good Lord. What am I doing? No, I definitely want Atlanta to win this
you
game.
I'm kind of rooting for Matt Ryan.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not a fan. I mean, I just, from all the talk about Matt Ryan can't win in the postseason.
Yeah.
And then to see how he played here in the Coliseum without Julio Jones. I thought if it's not going to be this year, it's not going to be ever for Matt Ryan.
Right.
So I'm kind of rooting for Matt Ryan and Atlanta this year.
I am too. You know, the funny thing about this game is it was one of those games where, you know, in the beginning of the head coaching search, we all thought, okay, well, this is the day, you know, because of who he is. But maybe the Rams will be able to get a coach Monday if they lose, da-da-da. Well, Rams already have a coach, right?
Right.
So now we don't really have to worry about that. But I think Shanahan's offense against that defense, especially Seattle's defense without Earl Thomas, they don't have that middle-of-the-field defense like they usually do.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So that could be an issue, especially with a Julio Jones in the middle of the field.
No doubt.
That could be a real issue.
You know, and the game is in Seattle.
No,
the game's
game
in Atlanta.
Is in Atlanta, yeah.
Is Michael Bennett still healthy?
I believe so.
Then I'm taking the Seahawks.
You
is
are.
Bobby Wagner still healthy?
Yeah.
Then I'm taking the Seahawks defense.
Interesting.
Yeah, but I'm rooting for Atlanta. I want to see if they can actually get over the hump. But I'm taking Pete Carroll and that defense and Russell Wilson to beat Atlanta.
All right, so we're on opposite sides of this one.
Yes.
All right, next one, Green Bay at Dallas. That is now 140
You're taking
on
Dallas.
Sunday.
You're taking Dallas. I know you are. You're going with the story.
No, I'm not.
You're going with Aaron Rodgers?
Yeah. Have you seen Aaron Rodgers
you,
play?
You're lying.
No.
I just talked you into
that. No, you did not.
You were all Dallas on
the
way over here.
No, I was not.
You're afraid to take.
I swear I was not.
You're afraid to take Dallas.
No, I'm not afraid to take Dallas. But I don't think Dallas is going to win. I've thought this for weeks. Look, I like Dak Prescott a lot. I have a lot
tremendous
of respect for what he's been able to do in this year. And I keep wondering, where would Dak Prescott have gone as a quarterback if he did not play at Mississippi State and he played in a pro-style offense, like a Stanford, for instance, in college? Where would he have gone in the draft?
Don't know.
Probably would not have gone in the fourth round because now we see him on this team running a pro offense, and he's doing it at a very, very, very high level.
I want to take Dallas, but, man, have you seen Aaron Rodgers' numbers a lot?
That's my exact point here.
Yeah. Who was it? Somebody was just on TMZ that said you'd be crazy to bet against Aaron Rodgers.
On TMZ?
I think it was Greg Jennings, former teammate.
Yeah, okay.
You'd be crazy to bet against Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, and the way that offense is playing.
That makes a whole lot of sense to me. I'm going with the Packers.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm going with the Packers in that one as well.
Speaking of that, Dak Prescott.
Yeah.
Does his success make you want Deshaun Watson?
Okay. So this is like the chicken and the egg argument, right?
Yeah.
Like, is it because of Zeke? Is it because of Dak? Is it because of that offensive line?
Yeah.
It's all three.
But just watching Dak Prescott having success, would you actually take a Watson number one?
For the Browns? I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, that's a toughie, right?
It's tough.
Yeah.
I like that
because
national
if you
championship
don't,
game.
Because if you don't, and he has success, they're going to say,
why
didn't you see Dak Prescott?
Yeah, but at the same time, I mean, the Browns have so many holes, and they, you know, people are mocking that Myles Garrett will be the number one overall pick, guy out of defensive end out of Texas A&M.
Baller.
And yeah,
ooh,
I'm not going to like lie and say I've seen him play that much.
Baller.
But yeah, apparently from everything I've heard, he's doing really, really well. So I think that's, you know, that's something you got to consider. You know, do you need a Jadeveon Clowney, J.J. Watt type, or do you want that quarterback, right?
Either
and
I want
I
the
quarterback.
Yeah.
What we're saying about Houston right now is because Houston doesn't have the quarterback, Jadeveon Clowney does not necessarily matter
true.
As much. So,
yeah.
I don't know. I think that's something that the Browns are going to have
sorry,
to
sorry, sidebar.
Yeah. No, it was a good sidebar.
But if I'm drafting, either I want the quarterback or the guy that knocks him down.
Yeah.
Yeah, so either one, you can't go wrong.
Yeah, maybe not. But that national championship game, though,
tremendous.
I mean, it was really good.
Gave him too much time.
Yeah, okay. But
you gave him 2 minutes.
This is you being a defensive guy.
You gave him 2 minutes.
You did. But, and they won, like, literally with the second left on the clock.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if anything, you did give him too much.
SC gave Vince Young 2 minutes.
Okay, but if you're an offense, are you not supposed to, like, is Jalen Hurts not supposed to go into the end zone?
No, you score. Yeah, I mean,
all right.
You score when you can score, or, I mean, Todd Gurley back in Arizona a season ago.
Uh-huh.
Versus Arizona, drops down to a knee on a long run.
Because you're already ahead, and the only way they can do anything is if they get the ball back. That
true.
Wasn't the case
right.
with Clemson, Alabama.
Right. There's no way around it. You need to score.
You do need to score.
But you gave them too much time.
You probably did give them too much time.
Go ahead.
All right. So we'll go to this last playoff game, which is now going to be played at 8:20 Eastern, 7:20 Central in Kansas City because there's an ice storm going into Kansas City, so it was supposed to be played at like 10 a.m., I think. Anyway, Pittsburgh, Kansas City. Who you got?
Pittsburgh.
Yeah?
Yes.
You feel
Pittsburgh.
Like... Pittsburgh. That offense, that defense is humming, huh?
Who's running the ball for Kansas City?
I actually don't know.
Who's running the ball for Pittsburgh?
You love Le'Veon
Bell. Pittsburgh.
Yeah?
I'm going with the Steelers.
Okay.
Who's at quarterback for the Steelers?
Ben Roethlisberger.
And who's for the...
Alex Smith.
Okay.
Do you see so on Good Morning Football at NFL Network show, do you see Melissa Etheridge's Alex Smith song?
No.
You got to check that out. It's
what
actually really funny. It's like Alex
check
Smith.
Down?
No. She's a Chiefs fan, so she was talking about how much she loves Alex Smith.
Oh.
It was funny. I mean, I enjoyed it.
Oh. Please throw the ball deep. I don't know what. Go vertical once.
No. You know, I...
Find somebody else except for Kelsey. Hey, anybody.
Why would you? Kelsey's really good. But I, the thing I like about the Chiefs, and I've been telling people I think the Chiefs can go to the AFC Championship game all year. So I want to pick them.
Yeah.
I don't think I can. And man, I'm like, I'm feeling like I'm second guessing myself right now and like not being a man of my convictions.
So make a pick today. And don't waffle.
No, I have to go with the Steelers.
I'm going Steelers.
I would have to go with the Steelers. Even though, you know, Big Ben was in the walking boot after the game last week against the Dolphins. And look, Le'Veon Bell, can you ever remember a running back with his kind of patience and the way he allows his linemen to set up blocks?
If I was a coordinator, defensive coordinator, and I saw the opposing running back do that to my defense, I'd fire everybody.
Why?
You mean you got that much time you can dance back there and pick a hole? We need to start over on defense. I'm serious.
But he does it to everybody.
I'm taking everybody off. As soon as I see that guy skip, and then go, I'm firing everybody. Get off.
Man.
Get off.
That's hard on him.
Yes, it's terrible. It's horrible. You don't see that.
Well, I think you see it with one person. That's why can't you just say he's special?
Because he's a running back.
Oh.
I'm just kidding. No, he is special. I told you, the first guy out of my mouth was Le'Veon Bell.
Yeah.
And when you talk about weather, look, when you got a back like that, weather doesn't matter.
That's true.
Yeah, so I'm going with them.
All right, I think I'll take the Pittsburgh Steelers as well. So in case we don't get to the people, that means Pittsburgh, New England for the championship game.
Oh, the NFL. Yes.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah. Who would you pick in that one?
Oh, wow. The game's in New England.
The game would be in New England.
I'll take New England just because of that.
Okay. Yeah. And so from your other picks, that would be Seattle and Green Bay. That game would be in Seattle.
I'll take Green Bay.
Wow.
Yeah.
Green Bay in Seattle. Uh-huh. And you don't think Dallas. Wait a minute. I just messed this up. You don't think Atlanta can beat Seattle at home, but you think Green Bay can beat Seattle in Seattle?
Who's at quarterback?
Aaron Rodgers. Okay, I mean, that's fair.
I put
fair.
A lot of stock in those guys.
All right, so
New England Green Bay would be my matchup. It would be the dream matchup.
It would be a great matchup.
It's the matchup that we haven't had yet.
Yeah, it's true.
Yes.
We have not had Brady Rodgers in a Super Bowl.
That's the one I'm praying for. I think everybody in this room is praying for that.
I think
that
so,
matchup.
Too. Yeah, I would love to see that.
That would be great. Yeah, that would be a shootout.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it would be good. I think we'll probably get Pittsburgh-Green Bay. Those are my two Super Bowl
That would be
picks.
Good. I mean, Big Ben versus Aaron Rodgers would be fun.
I do think that Pittsburgh can go into New England and beat them there because of the way that their offense is humming. And they get after quarterbacks really well. James Harrison, who has thighs for arms.
Thorms.
I heard that on the Dan Le Batard show the other day.
Thorms.
He's got thorms.
That's like a cankle.
Basically.
Yeah, he's got thorms.
Yeah,
like
so
that.
He's got thorms. So I think he can get after anybody. And so he might really hurt, not hurt, but disrupt the timing there with Alex Smith. And I think he can do the same thing with Tom Brady.
There's only a certain amount of teams that can go anywhere and not be intimidated.
Pittsburgh is
definitely one of them.
With
New England
history,
is one of them.
Yeah.
Green Bay, same deal.
Yeah.
I mean, they can walk into Dallas can walk into anybody's stadium and not feel intimidated.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. All right. Well, any parting shots, D-Far, on the coaching search before we go?
Like you said, they always win the press conference.
Yeah.
The first one is always great. But, you know, when you do your homework on a guy and you call people that you know and you ask them to tell me what you know about this guy, mm-hmm. it's rare when it actually matches up.
Hmm.
Like, you're going to like him the first time you meet him.
Yeah.
The first guy you're going to think about when you're actually talking to him is John Gruden.
It's true.
And when I was talking to him right outside this room, I felt like I was talking to Gruden again. He's looking right through you.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's passion there, and he knows who you are.
Yeah, he does. Yeah. He does know who you are. I thought that was one of the impressive things about him. And I was impressed with his performance in the press conference. You know, we win the press conference, whatever. But I'm really curious to see how he will implement all these changes for the Rams, because I think he's a good choice. I do. After what I've heard, and especially getting that endorsement from Marshall Faulk, I think he is a good choice. I think he's the right choice. And now we'll just have to see how it works out.
Well, you're a professional reporter.
I
had a question for the press conference. I didn't think it was appropriate.
Hmm.
Can you get Todd Gurley to 1,500 yards? Would that be appropriate in that press conference?
Probably
in that setting?
Not.
No? Okay, never mind.
Yeah. It's a good question, though.
Yeah. Can you get him in the end zone like 15 times?
Can we get him in the end zone?
Just checking.
Yeah,
okay.
No, I think we'll see.
Yeah.
All right.
And keep Aaron Donald the three technique.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Please do.
Folks, thank you for tuning in to Between the Horns. Appreciate you listening and watching wherever you may be in football. We'll see you next time.
Bye, Nathan.
Oh, my God.